You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where its fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. Let's do this thing. We're midweek, which means Mark Lawrence steps up in it. Playbook.com's Mark Lawrence. And as we've done with every guest that's joined us, we'll give Mark an opportunity to give us his Super Bowl thoughts. But we'll talk some NBA basketball and some college basketball. The Playbook is a 365 operation. And the Playbook's database now digs deep into the association's trends in history as well as college basketball. We talk basketball and football with Mark Lawrence. We talk winning with Damon Allen. Damon Allen, one of the winningest athletes ever, a four-time Grey Cup champion and an NCAA national champion, baseball champion. Pretty cool, man. So Cal State Fullerton in the house. Damon Allen will join us. Damon is accumulated, I believe, 84,000 freaking yards, man. Like, how many miles is that? Think about that. Think about that. You know, he was the all-time passing leader in pro football history, like, you know, 73,000 yards or something like that. Recently passed by Anthony Calvillo. Of course, Warren Moon's right on that list. Peyton Manning, Brett Favre. But Damon Allen joins us. We'll talk football with Damon Allen. We said the Playbook is a 365-day-a-year operation. Well, so is talking football, right? A ton of stuff to hit. And we're going to talk about the Atlanta Falcons and how they screwed this up. But we'll talk about Terrell Owens. We'll talk about Tom Brady. How much longer can he play? Damon Allen played till he was 44. I think Brady can do a similar thing. So Damon Allen in studio with us. Ultra cool. And, of course, we got a DraftKings lineup for you. Full slate of NBA basketball. I think there's, a dozen games on tap this evening. Nick Whalen, RotoWire, will step up and in. We'll talk some NBA DFS. Let's start off the show by talking some NBA basketball. Anybody that pays attention to the National Basketball Association is aware of the persistent rumors that Carmelo Anthony is going to be finally dealt from the New York Knicks. There's been a lot of talk over the last week or so that it would be Kevin Love for Carmelo Anthony. Now, I don't think that Carmelo Anthony is the cancerous poison that a lot of jackasses in the media make him out to be. But at the same point in time, the Cleveland Cavaliers aren't big enough jackasses to trade Kevin Love straight up for Carmelo Anthony. You know, Kevin Love just brings more to the table, is younger, and quite frankly, is better. Could Carmelo Anthony help the Cleveland Cavaliers? I think Melo would be a great fit on the Cleveland Cavaliers if they're able to keep Kevin Love in the process. But that's besides the point. Now, it's very, very interesting situation in New York right now. And the Knicks are constantly mocked for being a big fat ass joke. And, you know, while they are dysfunctional, they're not a complete joke. They've got some good young pieces. Porzingis is a solid young player. But the foundation definitely needs some help. The problem is the person in charge. As dysfunctional as Derrick Rose can be, and as dysfunctional as the relationship is with Carmelo Anthony, the real problem isn't on the court with the New York Knicks. The problem is off the court, all right? The problem is with the man who is putting the team together on the court. The reason you have a problem on the court is because the guy that's putting the players on the court doesn't know what the hell that he's doing. And I'm talking about Phil Jackson. I never thought I'd be standing here saying that Phil Jackson is clueless and lost, but Phil Jackson is clueless and lost, all right? Phil Jackson was an awesome coach, but as good of a coach as he was, he's as bad as a president and putting an NBA team together. And quite frankly, I wonder about his coaching abilities. You know, he coached Kobe Bryant and Shaquille O'Neal and Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan, and he basically tapped out after the fact. It's all like Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick was 4-12 for the Cleveland Browns, all right? You know, Belichick's a great coach. I'll be very interested to see. Does Belichick hang around when Brady retires? I don't think so, because Belichick knows that his success has been, you know, tied and joined at the hip with Tom Brady. But it's amazing to me with Carmelo Anthony. As Carmelo Anthony is often criticized as being selfish. He's not selfish. He's not a bad teammate. He's just an old school NBA player that plays a different style, a more isolated style and a more slowdown style than today's game, the transition game that we play in right now. The ball does die when it gets to Melo. Melo's never met a shot that he doesn't like. All that is true. But the guy is a pure scorer. He is a winner, and he is a champion. And it's amazing to me that Carmelo Anthony gets ripped for not waiving his no-trade clause contract in the contract here. He gets mocked for this. And in fact, there was a story in the Bleacher Report yesterday about how Carmelo Anthony really isn't a winner. Yeah, really. Some jackass at the Bleacher Report saying that Melo's not a winner. Yeah, did you win high school championships? Did you lead Syracuse to a national championship? Like, yeah, he's not a winner. You know, like, really, come on. You know, I'm embarrassed to be a media member most of the time with these jackasses. I don't mind hot takes, but you calling out a dude that's actually accomplished something in sports, not a winner. You know, gold medals don't count, right? So, yeah, he's not a winner. He's selfish. And if he really cared about winning, then he would accept a trade out of New York. Now, it's amazing to me. Now, you can argue that, you know, why do you even want to stay with the Knicks right now? You know, why don't you go to Cleveland? Why don't you go to Houston? You could have went to Chicago last year. There's a lot of contending teams that want Carmelo Anthony on their basketball team. Carmelo Anthony doesn't want to waive the no trade unless it's a perfect fit. He's getting ripped for it. In an era in which we rip everybody all the time for leaving all the time, you have a guy that says, I want to be a Knick for life. I love living in New York. I want to play for the New York Knicks. And he's getting ripped for wanting to stay and play and honor his contract. The world's turned upside down. And it's turned upside down when the Bleacher Report says something, fine. That's just the Bleacher Report. Phil Jackson retweets the story and comments and says, oh, this guy really hit the bell. Yeah, yeah, good job, Jackson. You know, you're like Donald Trump. You're more concerned with what's going on online than what's going on in the real world. And you know what? People think Donald Trump is insane, and he is, but Donald Trump isn't even the craziest, most insane, dumbest person in the city of New York. Phil Jackson is, and that's saying something. The New York Knicks will always be a freaking mess as long as Phil Jackson is in charge. Phil Jackson was a legendary coach, but he's running the New York Knicks organization, you know, into the freaking ground. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on Fantasy Sports Network continues. We're fired up. I'm looking forward to getting Damon Allen in studio in a couple of moments. Time, Nick Whalen's going to join us a little bit later on. We're going to talk some NBA DFS. We'll talk some NBA action tonight, some college basketball, quick Super Bowl recap. Mark Lawrence, playbook.com, joins us. And Mark's playbook, second to none, the best newsletter in the business, as I told you off the top of the program, year-round. So football's done, but the database also includes NBA and NCAA. Numbers as well. And Mark's got he opened up his new cafe, so to speak, an online cyber cafe, the Coffee Club. What's going on, Mark?
I'm doing great, Gabe. Thanks for the Coffee Club mention here. We're doing really well with that. It's just me chatting with people that want to know about what's going on the day's card. Real simple. Just if you want to get in the Coffee Club, just email me at connect, C-O-N-N-E-C-T, at playbook.com, and I'll put you on the Coffee Club list.
Yeah, you know what? I saw that for the first time, actually, in my inbox. The comment, I'm like, what's this? Coffee Club. And I saw, you know, the topics of the day, the big games of the day. It's a great idea. And we encourage people to pick up the newsletter. You can get it on your mobile devices as well over at the Google store. So, Mark, let's get right down to business here. Super Bowl is done, and when I look back on the Super Bowl, actually, you know, we can get into what, you know, they should have run the ball and all that other stuff, but a lot of trends that were there before the game, you know, stood true after the game. And once again, the higher-ranked defense won the Super Bowl, Mark.
They did. It's hard to beat that defense that, you know, ranks number one in the league in scoring defense. My goodness, they just stand the test of time. And up against number one scoring offenses, it's now 6 out of 7 winners in that particular role. And there was the New England defense that prevailed in this game once again. That or the Atlanta offense, which blew a tire in the fourth quarter of that football game.
Well, you're right. So 6-1, number one ranked offense scoring versus number one ranked defense scoring. But overall, just in general, the higher defense has just dominated Super Bowls now, Mark. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. If you want to win a football game, take a good defense to the Super Bowl game with you. It's just no coincidence that defenses win football games like that. And you're going back, and that's now 42 of the 51 Super Bowls.
Wow.
The team with the better defense has won the football game.
Yeah, something to remember for next year. And quickly as well, another thing, Mark, regular season MVPs, quarterbacks who win the most valuable player playing in the Super Bowl. We're 6-13 straight up going into to Sunday. Now 6-14 straight up. And we can't forget about the white jerseys, Mark. Now 12-1. People can laugh all they want, but there's something going on here.
Well, the guys that have worn the white jerseys aren't laughing. They're celebrating right now. They've had a good time with that. You mentioned the Super Bowl MVP quarterbacks. That's on a really bad, tough losing slide. How about 7 straight up and against the spread losers for the MVP Super Bowl quarterback now? Matt Ryan knows exactly what that's all about.
And speaking of white jerseys, Tom Brady's white jersey's missing, Mark.
Yeah, I can assure you that I had nothing to do with that. I'm looking up north in Canada to see if it might land up there anywhere. Gabe, would you have any idea?
No, people were insinuating somehow I had something to do with it. Trust me, if I had that type of power, I'd use it on something different and get him Brady's jersey. But I don't know. I'm baffled by this. Like, how does this jersey disappear? Who took it? You know, like, it's not someone on the street. Like, the cops are like, oh, we're taking this seriously. Well, you know, it's somebody in the media, or it's an inside job, man. And one of the Patriot ball boys or somebody said, you know what, I'm gonna snag this. But how the hell do you sell this? You can't put it on eBay. It's stolen property.
No, you can't. But all you have to do is find one buyer, get in, get out, you know, and cash the chips, I guess. But the first person I would look at would be those kids that put that needle in the football that got Tom Brady in trouble to begin with, the locker room ball boys.
Good call. You know what? Quickly on this, Mark, you know, Brett Musburger started that VSIN stuff and they're out of South Point. Yeah, off to a bang, Mark. Somebody robbed the South Point sports book after the Super Bowl. I don't know if you heard about this.
No, I didn't.
Awesome.
No.
Yeah, and I know it's funny, right? No one got hurt, so we can laugh. But yeah. Right after the Super Bowl, about 9:30 local time, dude walked in right into the sports book, walked behind the counter of the sports book, had a semi-automatic machine gun, and left with $58,000. Except he got caught. Of course, he got caught on the way out of the casino. They had a silent alarm and whatever. They nailed him. And the best part is, no, he didn't have a losing bet on the Super Bowl or anything. But he said he has 3 kids and he's broke. And he asked if I just apologize, can you let me go? He wanted to apologize to the South Point. He thought maybe, you know, just a misunderstanding, Mark.
I think that something about that semi-automatic doesn't fit into an apology somehow, some way. I just don't quite understand what the guy's thinking was, but obviously poor planned and a man of desperation, much like the people that bet that Super Bowl game as well, too, by the way.
Yeah, somebody that lived in Vegas and been to the South Point, he's lucky he didn't get shot by another patron there. There's a lot of semi-automatics there. Shug Knight hangs out there. Flavor Flav, it's known. Like, you go to South Point, man, make sure that you know where you're standing. But that's besides the point. All right, Mark, so let's talk some basketball, man. We got some games tonight, and we got a team in your backyard, actually. The hottest team in the NBA right now, the Miami Heat, are hot, literally and figuratively. 11 straight wins for the Miami Heat, and they're putting up big points in the process, man. They're scoring 110 points per game during their 11-game win streak.
Yeah, this cluster of victories by this team all in 21 days. I mean, it's been in a short order here. They haven't even had time to think about what it is they're doing here. And people are asking me what's going on with this Heat team down here. And the simple fact of the matter is they're healthy. They were a team that was really in disarray with a lot of injuries. Pat Riley's not really looking for this basketball season to be much. He wants to build for next year. But, you know, now everybody's back healthy again. Whiteside is back in the lineup here right now. Dragic is doing really well. They're just shooting lights out right now. And every team in the league, as you know, Gabe, is going to have their season peak and they're going to have their season valley. And right now the Heat is in a season peak mode right now.
You know what? And I'm surprised about the point spread. I was surprised to see it at 3.5, and I see it's up to 4 right now. Milwaukee are 1-5 against the spread. The last 6 times they've been posted as a home favorite. favorite, Mark. This number surprises me. I like the 4 points.
I would look at the 4 points as well here, too. I know Miami beat them earlier this year down here in Miami. They beat them by 12 points, so there's some Bucks revenge in this basketball game here. But it's very, very difficult to step in front of a streaking team playing their best basketball of the season as an underdog. That's kind of a formula for success, and I think Miami has it in their favor here tonight.
I like the over in this game as well. I mentioned Goran Dragic. Dragic's on fire, as you wrote in the Coffee Club. What is it, 13 of his last 16 three-point shots? He's hot from behind the arc. Whiteside's a monster. Johnson can kill anybody in the NBA if you want to get into a fight. And I tell you, last week, who was it that threw Whiteside down? I tweeted. I said, you're lucky Johnson didn't, like, murder you. Like, really. That guy is, like, he could be in the UFC, that guy type of deal. Like, he's a nut job. He can kill anybody. But I like this game to go over the number. The Bucks don't play defense. They're scoring. They hung 137 up on the board. To me, it's a fair number, 209.5. And you see nowadays, Mark, these modern kids, these millennials in the NBA, they don't play defense, man. Everybody's shooting threes. Nobody plays D.
No, they don't play D. That's a thing of the past. It's like running the football in the National Football League. It's in the past as well. And Miami Heat right now with this hot hand, as you say, Johnson is like Draymond Green to this team. He's their enforcer. He's the guy that's keeping everything clean inside. They're allowed to play their basketball game here in Miami here. And, are they going to win this game? I don't know that for sure, but I think 4 points has to be a take in a contest like this with a red-hot Miami Heat basketball team.
All right. Before we get to the college slate, the T-Wolves. T-Wolves and the Raptors tonight playing. Raptors have kind of been up and down. With DeRozan in the lineup, obviously they can beat anybody in the league. But with that being stated, you had some big numbers I saw in the database with Thibodeau, a same season revenge. And the T-Wolves getting points tonight on their home court, kind of attractive, actually.
Yeah, I think it is. You're talking Thibodeau in his career, 21-9 straight up end of the spread at home with same season revenge of more than 10 points. That's a pretty strong number. You get 15-3 at this stage of the season here. So big revenge numbers here for Minnesota in this basketball game here. I like their chances here tonight. You're catching Toronto off a big revenge win of their own, and you couple that with the fact that Minnesota just tripped up, lost a tough 2-point loss at home in their last basketball game. I think that makes Minnesota a live home dog here tonight.
All right, so speaking of hot teams, the Oklahoma State Cowboys, let's switch gears, talk college. They're a hot team right now, Mark. They started out, it was 0-4. I remember it was 0-6, actually, in Big 12 play. 0-6 in Big 12 play, was it? Yeah, 0-6 in Big 12 play. And you're like, oh, boy. And I didn't think much of Oklahoma State. Here we go again. Another 15-15 type team this year. And then, boom, they win 4 conference games in a row. They won that game against Arkansas in the Big 12 SEC Challenge. They won 5 games in a row. They're 11-6-1 on the spread, ATS on the season right now. And this Baylor team, I know they're number 1 in the RPI ranking, but they're offensively challenged on the road. I prefer to ride the hot home team here. I guess you could say it's a letdown spot for Oklahoma State, but you could have said that after they're on a 5-game win streak. This team's feeling it, and they think they can go to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, they're feeling pretty good about themselves right now, and rightfully so, as you mentioned here, this big streak they're on. What I don't like to the game is the way the game sets up. Oklahoma State off the big upset win. Baylor got upset as a favorite. That's what I call a double blowout scenario here, favoring the Baylor, the road team in this situation. And the fact that I think the odds maker may have caught up with the Cowboys here.
Yeah.
He brings in the favorite in this game here. If they'd have been the home underdog here, I'd have been on them like white on rice.
North Carolina State at FSU. FSU are a dangerous team. Some people are talking potential sleeper for the Final Four this year. I could buy into that. They score 84 points a game, but the spread's damn high. And, last 5 games in this series, I looked it up, Mark, the biggest margin of victory was 13. It's generally been a pretty close series. We saw NC State win a 16.5-point road dogs against Duke. I like the underdog here.
I do, too. You've got an excellent coach in Gottfried here taking double digits. As you've said, he proved it against Duke. He's live and competitive in any game that he plays. Florida State took this team out twice last year, Gabe, and the reason I mention that is if NC State finished one game under 500 last year, any one of those two losses would have made them a winning team last year. They ended up being a losing team. I love situations like that. Why call them one game under teams that have double revenge? That's the role for NC State here tonight, catching Florida State up a 38-point win. I think this is an overlay. I got to grab the points with the pack here.
My pick for a national champion right now are the Oregon Ducks at plus 1,700, 17-1. I think it's great odds for the Ducks as well. They massacred Arizona. It was Zona's worst loss in 7 years. The Stanford Cardinals coming off a win versus Utah, but historically they've been killed. They do not fare well when they play on the road at Arizona. The last four games in the series, not just at home, but on the road, they've lost by 39, 32, 14, and 22. You're going to have a really, really pissed off Arizona team tonight, but it's 13.5.
Yeah, it's a big number here, Gabe, and you know the number and the revenge factor here for Stanford. They got beat by, like you say, 39 points at home. That's an embarrassing home loss, and teams like that will kind of tend to dig down deep, especially taking double digits in a basketball game here. I'd normally be on Arizona. They don't lose back-to-back games too regular. They're off that big 27-point loss, but I think it's just too many points here. I think the odds makers even this game out. He did a nice job with the spread here. Put a gun to my head, I'd probably grab the points with the 39-point revenging Stanford Cardinal, but I'm going to end up watching the game with you.
It's 5-1 to the over, last six in the series. I think it gets there. I think the number's too low at 132.5. And for the guys in the booth, actually, I think I screwed up and might not put that on the plays of the day. I do like Stanford, Arizona over. That was one of my picks of the day, actually, but I forgot. So speaking of plays of the day, Mark Lawrence's playbook and the coffee club. Check him out over at playbook.com for all the information. He's also one of the covers experts, and he's got a free pick over at Covers today. We got an Atlantic 10 contest. Virginia Commonwealth laying 6 points on the road against G-Dub, George Washington.
Yeah, you're talking George Washington here playing with some mighty serious revenge in this basketball game here, Gabe. They're now one game over 500 on the season. They got beat by 30 at Virginia Commonwealth earlier this season. The game is what I call a perfect set. They're in off a loss. VCU off the win here. This is a big, huge game for George Washington and the Colonials here. I'm going to grab them plus the points, and I'm not going to be a lick surprised if they don't upend the Rams in this contest.
You know, I'm going to jump on board with you here. And, you know, for the record, VCU, they're 3-1 to the over in their last four games. And George Washington actually scoring a lot of points recently. They're 4-1 to the over in their last five contests. Mark, it's always a pleasure, my man. I look forward to the coffee club on a daily basis. Check it out over at playbook.com or connect at playbook.com for more information directly from Mark. But it's a wealth of information. If you're watching this show, then you like this type of information. So check it out over at playbook.com. Thanks for the time, Mark.
Thank you. My pleasure. Enjoy the games. Be good. Thank you.
There's Mark Lawrence with us. All right, we'll take a quick break. We got a legend joining us in studio. Coming up next, Damon Allen. Game time decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenzi. We're fired up to welcome the legend into the studio. I talked about winning. We said, what is Damon Allen? He's a winner. Four-time Grey Cup champion, NCAA baseball national champion with Cal State Fullerton, a Hall of Famer, CFL Hall of Famer, and Hall of Fame, it's another thing in the Allen household. If you're wondering, yes, his brother is also in the Hall of Fame, Marcus Allen. So we're going to talk about the Patriots. We're going to talk about Brady's future with a man that played until he was 44 years old. And we just did the math here, David. 84,000 yards works out to 47 freaking miles, man. 47 miles of football fields in your career.
That's almost Toronto to Hamilton. Close?
No. That's...
47 miles or is it 60-something kilometers?
Say, 77 kilometers, exactly.
Right, so
yeah,
it is, right.
You're close. Yeah, you're getting there. You're right. What is it technically? I took the earpiece out here. I was thinking Hamilton's what, 100 miles?
We deal with kilometers here in Canada. Don't you know that?
Oh, my God, you're right.
We deal with kilometers.
You're right. You've actually moved the football from Toronto to Hamilton.
We should try that.
That's a lot.
Throw football from Toronto to
just
Hamilton.
Just constantly move. Yeah, we get some charity and get it on the road there.
We should start that, man.
I like that.
Yes.
I'm full of great ideas, Dave. Full of great ideas. So as I stated, you know, we can go on and on as far as what this man has accomplished, but you already know that. But I want to talk some football with Damon Allen. So Super Bowl, your thoughts, man. Did the New England Patriots win that game, or did the Falcons collapse and lose that game?
Well, the Patriots did everything they needed to do to win that game, from playing solid defense to outstanding offense, and actually to finish and play a 60-minute game. It's clearly everyone who watched that game felt that the Atlanta Falcons had control of that game when the score went 28-3. When you look at the total aspect of the game, they didn't score any more points after that.
Like you said, Atlanta, New England did everything they had to do to stay in the game. Atlanta did everything they had to
do lose
to lose it. So there's been a lot of talk about they're up by 8 points, 4.5 minutes left. They have first down on the Patriots 23-yard line. They try to throw the football. They lose 11 yards on the sack right there. They throw the ball again. They get a 10-yard holding penalty. Next thing they're out of field position. It's on Kyle Shanahan. He's the offensive coordinator. But does Matt Ryan at some point, you were playing so long, I don't know, headsets, right?
Absolutely.
So there's a headset now. Do you say back? No, I don't think so, man. Let's run the ball here.
I think there's a time when a quarterback needs to step in and realize the situation, because he's out there on the field and understanding when you're running the football, you actually keep the clock running. That's one way of controlling the clock when it's need to run the football. And so it's no different than Russell Wilson in the Super Bowl not giving the ball to Lynch, and they called the passing play.
Why do you think they did that? Do you think they didn't want Marshawn Lynch getting the MVP and selling? You think it was a personal thing? They were like, you know what?
Well, you hope that they don't think that way. But
do they think that way?
But I'm starting to see that it is like that. They want the star quarterback, certain guys to win MVP. I guess it's part of the hoopla and all that stuff, the fashion of the sport, but there's a time when a quarterback, I believe, needs to step and say, that's not a good call, and I'm going to run the football, and you take your chances. You hope it works, but if it does work, then it's say, well, I made a change in that play because we felt we should have ran the football at that time.
So you were at one point the all-time passing leader in pro football history. You're one of the winningest quarterbacks in football history. So, you know, you are a great quarterback. Is Tom Brady, is Brady now officially the greatest of all time? Like, is it hard to argue against it?
No, it's not hard to argue. He's 7 Super Bowls. No other quarterback has attempted that. No other quarterback has won 5. And this past Super Bowl has put him on a small G, godly kind of.
Who was your guy growing up? Who was who was your quarterback?
It started off in the 70s with the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Bradshaw
started with the Steelers. The Bradshaw.
I guess it was tough.
Then my brother went to the Raiders. I became somewhat of a Raider fan, but
Plunkett.
Then after that, I mean, I've been a Brady fan since he's got his opportunity to start playing. You know, I've been a Patriots fan.
And, you know, camera to Drew, big football fan over here.
Hey, Drew.
He asked me, he's like, because I was talking, we were talking about your numbers. And he goes, well, what happened? How come he didn't get a shot in the NFL? And I said, well, a lot of black quarterbacks, it was different in those days, right? Like, you were right after Warren Moon. Warren was like the MVP of the Rose Bowl, didn't get a look, had to go to Canada right after. How much was Warren Moon an influence on you professionally?
Warren was a huge influence on me because this was the first time when Warren played in Edmonton. It was the first time I actually was introduced to the Canadian Football League. And plus, I realized after a couple of years in college that the Eskimos had my rights. So it was in 1982. when the NFL striked.
Yeah.
And then they started showing CFL games. So that's when I first got my introduction and realized.
And you were coming from a pass happy conference. So you're thinking, damn, this is right in my wheelhouse, man. Right?
Absolutely. And find out they have my rights as well. But you have to understand, my first year in the CFL, I was 157 pounds. So the National Football League, if you wasn't 6'4, 225 pounds.
Prototypical, yeah.
And a pocket passer, I mean, they're looking to change my position. So I think many of the black quarterbacks in that era, if you're athletic and the ability to do a lot of different things, they were all going to the
Canadian Football League. Say 157 pounds, you're saying you were a pitcher then, too.
I was a pitcher.
So you're like, so you see Marcus Stroman with the Jays now, sort of a shorter dude, compact? Like, or are you like a little Pedro, man, skinny dude? Like, bring it.
But the biggest difference is they were throwing 96, 97.
what were you peeking out
I
at?
Was throwing like 91, 92 around that time.
Well, it was good enough to win a national championship.
Absolutely, absolutely. We had a very good team. And, I mean, it was fun because I actually was playing baseball and football ever since I was 7 years old. So I was going from one sport to the next. And so that's...
Growing up, what did you want to be? Did you view yourself more as a baseball player? You saw it with the Pirates.
I think the goal I wanted as a child was to give myself an opportunity to either play one sport or the other professionally, and that's what I set out to do.
Yeah, and you thought that football gave you a better opportunity?
Well, football, I was an everyday player. In baseball, I was a middle reliever and a spot starter, and so there are times that you go with a three-game series and you don't even see the mound because the starters are doing very well, and then the closers are coming in. So it could be a lonely life being a bullpen pitcher, all the guys who know.
So you played till you were 44 years old. Tom Brady's 39 right now. He said that Giselle, his wife, asked him to retire after the game. She said, you got five now. This is it. What more do you need? Yet he doesn't look at it like that. That's why, what is it about when you win multiple championships? Seems like you just want more, right? It's you almost expect to win, isn't it, right? You expect to win. You're like, hey, we can do this again. Brady said before he wants to play till he's 45. I don't doubt him right now, man.
Well, I think the two things that will cause a player to retire is his ability to play the game still skillfully and the passion. If he still has the passion to go out there and compete and go through the 6 week of training camp and all those things. And so if we look at Brady and the way he played this past Super Bowl, clearly he has the fire and the passion to still go out there and compete. And skillfully, I mean, he can still throw the football, make great decisions and all those things. And so, and then the statement he made with after the Super Bowl, he's only going to ever be with his coach, Belichick.
Yeah.
So if Belichick is still there, I'm pretty sure Brady will still be there as well.
Yeah, I think they retire at the same time, don't they?
I think they will.
Yeah.
Because he said he won't play for no other coach.
Yeah, that's very, 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 very interesting. And Garoppolo was brought in. They had the same agent, too. And it's pretty, pretty talented. I guess they told Jimmy, you know what? We thought maybe we were going to push him out the door, but he's going to be here for a while. Plus, he doesn't get hit that much either. He hasn't been beat up all that much, right? So physically, he gets rid of the ball so quickly. Physically, he's still in great shape. He hasn't been hit that much. He's played in so many playoff games, though. It's an extra two full seasons, man. That's unbelievable.
Well, I think a lot of ways, as you get older and more experienced in the league, the game starts to slow down, even though your skill set may slow down a little bit. So his sharpness of his mind and understanding defense and understanding how to play the game and knowing his offense makes it so much easier to play the game and like I said, his skill set in the pocket, far as his drops and all this stuff, he doesn't use wasted movements and all those things, and he gets rid of the football. He knows what he's doing with the football, which makes him the best in the game.
All right, I wanted to ask you, man, time's just flying by here. I wish we had more time. He comes all the way to the studio here, but Terrell Owens, man, do you know T.O. at all? I imagine you crossed paths with him.
I met T.O. before.
Yeah, all right, so Terrell Owens doesn't get into the Hall of Fame once again. You look at the guy's numbers, man.
Ridiculous.
Ridiculous, like the numbers are there, and they're all like, well, he was a distraction in the room. Yet that doesn't matter. I love Lawrence Taylor, but Lawrence Taylor was freebasing in the room before games sometimes, right? Like,
absolutely. Like,
so what's a distraction, man? You know what I'm saying?
Does this matter?
Is he, come on, man. What's your take on this? Hall of Fame for T.O.?
Of course it's a Hall of Fame for T.O., but they're actually setting something up. Did you notice the Hall of Famers this year? There were two running backs winning this year.
Yeah, yeah.
So next year, who's going in the Hall of Fame and who's up for Hall of Fame? Randy Moss?
Yeah. Okay.
I believe T.O. and Randy Moss will go in the same time. When you open up that the gate, so because that's the first time I've ever seen two running backs go in at the same time.
Good point. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I think they're setting up the ability to have two receivers next year. So I think he's going in next year. Should he been in the Hall of Fame previous? Yes, absolutely. His numbers are ridiculous. He's second in receiving yards.
And people talk, oh, he's a distraction, he's a bad teammate. Well, man, the guy played on a broken leg in the Super Bowl.
Well, you need, I'll tell you what, you need a variety of different characteristics in your ball club.
Yeah. You know, and I know your boy is Pinball Clemens, one of the nicest men in the world, and I heard him say the same thing once. He's like, you need bad guys in the room.
You need some crazy guys in the room. And plus, T.O.'s very passionate. Very passionate. So I like his fire and how he played the game. I mean, was he a creator of dissension in the locker room? Yes, but you can deal with it in such a certain way, and you need those kind of guys. It's just a matter of how you deal with him to get him all in one accord, but you know he's going to create some stuff. But he does tremendous things on the football field, and so sometimes as a quarterback, I'd rather have a guy who can do tremendous things on the football field, and I'll deal with all the stuff that we have to. But if you only have one guy like that, then as a team, you can handle.
Yeah,
you
can't
have three or four or five guys on a team creating that kind of cancer. But if it's just one, then you can deal with it.
All right, Damon Allen with us. We got to do this again, man. CFL season.
Let's do it.
Can't get here soon enough. It's always a pleasure, my man.
Always, man.
Yeah, I wish we had more time right now. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Our back's already against the wall. We're going to get you some NBA DFS picks for tonight, man. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. Another show just flying by from Mark Lawrence. That was great stuff with Damon Allen, man. Like, yeah, we got to keep digging deeper with Damon, though, because, you know, this guy's got so many stories. He's been there. He's done that. He's been around forever. All right. So let's talk some NBA DFS. Last night, we only had a light night in the association. Tonight, we got a full slate of games. Basically, you know, whoever you want, man, you can get tonight. And, you know, I got a lineup for you guys, but it's tough. Tonight's one of these nights where you could have multiple lineups and different approaches and attack different games, numerous games with extremely high totals on the board. Let's bring in a Nick Whalen, rotowire.com's Nick Whalen, to break it down. What's going on, Nick? Thanks for joining me, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right, so let's jump right in so we can get to as many picks, players, and everything else in between as possible. DeMarcus Cousins is out tonight. The Boston Celtics roll into Sacktown, which there's going to be points on the board here. The total's 211 points still. I like Isaiah Thomas in this spot. He's like 10,100, I believe. Ultimately, I didn't end up with him in my lineup. But with that being stated, there's going to be some cheap value with Sacramento King players tonight, isn't there?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just going to be a matter of picking, you know, which of those guys is going to be the main beneficiary with DeMarcus Cousins out of the lineup. To me, I'm going to lean toward Kostakoufis. You know, it's tough because DeMarcus Cousins, for all the flack that he gets for being this emotional guy, now he's suspended on Wednesday. He hasn't missed a game in almost 2 months, so it's a little bit tough to determine. You know, there's not really a sample to say, okay, when he's out, this is where all the minutes go, because it's been a while. But to me, Kostakoufis is the guy. I think both he and Anthony Tolliver should see increased minutes. Willie Cauley-Stein going to see some more minutes off the bench, but I'm most interested in Kufis. He's returned at least six times value in three of his last seven games, and he's only played 20 plus minutes in two of those games. So you have to figure he easily eclipses 20 minutes tonight and could even maybe get into the lower mid 30s.
You know what? I agree with you. I've got Kufis in my lineup. I like Tolliver as well, but as you stated, you know, how much upside is there with him? He's an athletic player. I like his athletic. But I see more upside with Kufis getting minutes on the floor. I saw people talking about Cauley-Stein. He just doesn't play enough for my liking. So I like Kufis as well in this spot. You know who I've got actually as well? And I don't love taking two guys from the same team, but because of the pricing points, I'm going to do it, is Darren Collison. Listen, this guy's never met a shot he doesn't like. There's no Cousins. There's no Gay. Somebody's got to shoot the freaking ball tonight, and I think Collison's going to do it. I think it's a fair play at 5,400 for Collison.
Right. I agree with you. Even you have to remember that even though there's a likelihood that this will maybe be a blowout in favor of Boston with no DeMarcus Cousins, no Rudy Gay, like you said, you know, somebody's got to get to 90 to 100 points for the Kings. Somebody has to do the scoring. So even as we talk about, you know, DeMarcus Cousins being out of the lineup, who takes those minutes, you have to also think about who takes that production, you know, all those possessions that DeMarcus Cousins is using up with his, you know, 40 plus percent usage rate on the season. Those have to go somewhere. Some of them will go to Kostas Koufos, but I think Darren Collison is a perfectly reasonable choice to, you know, to take on a larger role offensively for this team.
I've been praising John Wall for the last 6 weeks or so. And there's so much talk about Westbrook, and there's so much talk about Harden, and then LeBron's drama and Carmelo Anthony's drama and everything else in between. But, you know, it's funny. People were always quick in the media to kick John Wall when he was down, but whenever he kills it, they're not too quick to give him the love after, are they? And he's one of the most consistent players in the NBA. I look at this Wizards team tonight, though, Nick, man. I like them all, dude. I like them all. Like, you can make a legitimate argument. Like, if somebody told you I got John Wall in my lineup, you can't say he's an idiot. I like Bradley Beal tonight in the 7,000 range. Hell, Otto Porter, I had him against the Cavs the other night. You know, 40 DK points. And, you know, how about Markieff Morris? The Wizards aren't only winning every night. There's a ton of great fantasy options with these guys. And they're playing against the worst defensive fantasy team in the league in the Nets.
Right. Everything's kind of coming up Wizards tonight. I think the one argument that I've heard is that, you know, oh, they got up so high for that Monday game against Cleveland, 17-game home winning streak on the line, goes into OT, everybody played big minutes, they're going to be tired, they're going to be, you know, demoralized after that loss. Even if that's the case, they're playing the Brooklyn Nets. It doesn't really matter. I mean, the Brooklyn Nets are the worst fantasy defense in the league. They're especially bad against point guards. So I love John Wall. I have him and Giannis Antetokounmpo as my two point guards in most of my DraftKings lineups tonight. But I think I do like Wall slightly better. Like you said, he really hasn't gotten his due for just how good he is. I mean, it basically took the Wizards winning 17 straight games and getting a national TV matchup with the Cavs for the casual fan to even know that this is the kind of year that he's having. And I'm with you on Brad Beal as well. I mean, on Monday he became just the third Wizards player in the last 17 years to have three 40-point games in a single season, joining Arenas and Michael Jordan. So elite numbers that we're seeing from Brad Beal, a guy that, you know, some people were willing to kind of write off in terms of upside after he had these recurring leg issues. But it's been a pleasant surprise that that hasn't looked to be a problem at all for him. And you mentioned Porter as well. I mean, who would have guessed that Otto Porter, you know, is leading the NBA in three-point percentage. All of a sudden, you know, you're starting to hear these talks that he might be a max guy this summer. And as crazy as it sounds, it's hard to argue with the production he's giving. I also like Markieff Morris up front, and I think Marcin Gortat is a nice pivot play at center as well.
Yeah, you know, I tell you what, Brad Beal's a great player, and they've never really had a constant run together with Wall and Beal on the floor at the same time. If Beal can stay healthy, he produces. And they're a dangerous team. They're going to be a dangerous team in Eastern Conference Finals. I'm a Raptors fan, and you know, a lot of Raptor fans sort of just penciled the Raps in. Oh, it'll be back to the Eastern Conference Finals. It's going to be a battle, man. Washington's the real deal. Brooks is doing a great job coaching this team. Denver's a fun team to watch. They play real good at home. On the road, you know, they're not quite as good. Extremely high total tonight. 225 points in this basketball game. I like Millsap in this spot, but let's talk about it from a Nuggets perspective with Gallinari out. Who do you like?
You know, it's kind of a choice when Gallinari misses games between Wilson Chandler and Will Barton. And, you know, I've always kind of compared this version of the Nuggets to kind of the Celtics of the West. And obviously the Celtics are a better coach team. They're a better team overall. But the way that they compare is that, you know, the Nuggets don't necessarily have a superstar, but they go like 9 or 10 deep with really good players. And it's kind of a blessing and a curse. You know, you're able to get some of these guys at cheaper prices because they're not playing huge minutes. But at the same time, there's some of those nights where Kenneth Reed might only play 17 minutes. Wilson Chandler might only see 22 minutes. So, you know, having a guy like Gallinari out certainly doesn't help the Nuggets, but it helps us as DFS players, I think, because it kind of thins out what's otherwise usually a pretty messy rotation for Denver.
Do you have any update as far as Kawhi is concerned for tonight? And that's the one thing that I dislike about the NBA and hosting the show earlier in the day. As you know, man, you know, know, you find out 20 minutes before tip-off at times than right. the starting lineups. So it's a big if. But I know you like LaMarcus Aldridge tonight, specifically if Kawhi is out. And I like this, too. And you know as well as I do, Nick, people have short attention spans. And a lot of people will look at the box score. What did he do in the last game? And I last night I took Trevor Ariza. And a lot of people probably, Trevor Ariza, he's only hit four of his last 20 three-point shots. Exactly. Yeah, and last night, nice and cheap. Nobody owned him. Boom, Ariza back to his regular numbers. You know Aldridge is going to bounce back, specifically tonight. Hell, they're saying Okafor might be gone by the end of the day today. So what's your take on that?
Well, you know, when we talked earlier, I like you said, I mentioned I like LaMarcus Aldridge taking on a larger playmaking role if Kawhi doesn't play, but Kawhi went through shootaround. All indications right now are that Leonard will be back in the lineup. So I'm a little bit, you know, down on Aldridge compared to where I was a couple hours ago. But at the same time, like you said, I mean, law of averages here. It's LaMarcus Aldridge. He had a terrible game the other night against Memphis. I watched that on Monday night, and it was one of those games, a game you rarely see from the San Antonio Spurs, where nobody seemed to have it. I mean, Pop made a, you know, put some backups in early in the fourth quarter to try to make a run, and he basically waved the white flag with, you know, 7 or 8 minutes left on the clock. And it was just one of those games that you rarely see from San Antonio, and I don't see it really happening any other way than the Spurs bouncing back tonight, especially with Kawhi Leonard back in the lineup.
Well, you know, and I like guys coming off of bad games because I know that they're personally motivated. You know that, you know, Aldridge is showing up tonight. He wants to play well, right? So that's what I like about it. Unfortunately, we got to get out of here already. Thanks for joining me, Nick.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks for having me.
Like I said, there's a million options on the board tonight. I like Kevin Durant. I like Dwayne Wade. Andrew Wiggins in a good spot for the T-Wolves tonight. DeMar DeRozan in a good spot for the Raptors. And as we mentioned earlier, Markieff Morris is killing it. Mr. Consistent. Rudy Gobert is putting up big numbers. You can put 10 lineups together tonight. We'll come back with a lineup and our plays of the day. It's time for our DraftKings lineup of the day. And you know what? You don't have to copy and paste the lineup per se. You can just hand pick a couple of players that you like. I think we've got some solid value picks on the board. Let's start off with Kyrie Irving. I got to tell you, man, this guy puts up monster numbers, but it's only $7,100. I think it's going to be some points put up on the board tonight against Indiana. I can't afford John Wall, but I don't have any problem taking Bradley Beal. Man, this guy's he's lighting it up. As long as he's healthy, he's on the court. He's a dynamic player that puts up monster fantasy numbers. All right, Markieff Morris, another Washington Wizard here, $6,600. Nets are terrible on defense. He's put up 31 or more DK points in 8 of the last 10, no less than 25 DK points in the last 10 games. Kristaps Porzingis, the Knicks might be a mess, but Porzingis is not. And the Clippers, for a bunch of big dudes, they don't play defense at all. All right, this game's going to be a track meet. Porzingis is going to put up 35, 40 DK points tonight. DeMarcus Cousins is out, so Kufis steps up. And at only $3,600, I think he can give us 25, 30 DK points for the price. I love Darren Collison tonight. All right, this guy bombs away as it is. They have nobody to shoot the ball. Collison's going to have a million shot attempts tonight. Paul Millsap, this bastard flies under the radar all the time, man. Great, great pick, $7,400, especially against Denver tonight. And Lou Williams, I'm not a big Lou Williams fan, but the guy does put up points, and he fits the price point. All right, our NBA plays of the day. Miami Heat, they've won 11 in a row. Give me them. +4. Heat and Bucks. Going to be a high-scoring game. Over 209. Jazz and Pelicans. Total's only 199 points. Jazz aren't known for being a scoring team, but they can actually light it up against a bad defense. This game's going to go over the number. I don't like betting against my Raptors, but I'm going to take the T-Wolves +3.5. I think the Raptors and the T-Wolves going to be a high-scoring game that goes over 212.5. College basketball. Oklahoma State -120 on the money line. North Carolina State +13.5. Stanford, Arizona over 132.5. 133, and the Minnesota Wild will beat the Chicago Blackhawks. May the winners be yours.